This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. The Texas sweeping school finance case resumed this morning. There was a year-long break in the case that allowed Texas legislature to address some of those issues. Today, the question was, did the lawmakers do enough? David Hinojosa is a lead lawyer for MILDEF and argued in court today that the system is still unconstitutional. And here's what he told me on Friday.
They still shortchanged Texas public school children by putting only $3.5 billion of the $5.4 billion that was cut previously, and by leaving a $1,000 gap between the property poor and property rich districts, even with the property poor districts taxing 10 cents higher. So we do think that, you know, the funding system, because it's state created, definitely needs more fairness and equality, especially since all kids are held to the same standards.
We're talking about the Texas system of public school financing this half hour. We're joined by Joe Smith, a former superintendent, now a consultant, and he runs the website TexasISD.com, which is a comprehensive website about education in the state, and Professor Cal Gilson of the Southern Methodist University in the Political Science Department. Welcome both for being here.
Good to be with you.
So, Joe Smith, you were in the courtroom today observing how what did you see?
Well, I've been in the courtroom all day, and I think it could best be summarized. The judge came in, and when he took his seat, he said, he quoted Yogi Berra, deja vu all over again, and I pretty much agree with that. We've rehashed a few points. Other than that, it's the same stuff, adding any changes that the legislature made with the 83rd.
So Judge Dietz, he ruled previously that the system was unconstitutional. We looked at what the legislature did. Doesn't look like that Judge Dietz has seen much to change his mind about the constitutionality of the Texas school districts.
I would agree with that. Judge Dietz has said that, and several of the witnesses and the lawyers have talked about the change making a minuscule difference in the funding, as well as there were no structural changes. It is the structure that is inequitable and inadequate, and there were no structural changes, and the changes that were made, the cases being made, that they are temporary.
Right, the legislature gives and the legislature takes, depending on what the budget looks like every 2 years to every 2 years. So they're saying, you know, next time they meet in Austin, they could take away funding from schools if they don't have any system in place to keep them from doing that.
That's correct.
Now, Cal Gilson, you look at things as the political point of view. Is this not just in a courtroom issue, but is this a political question as well?
Oh, there's no question about it. There's a little bit of a ghost dance quality to school funding debates in Texas because our state legislators and elected officials are so reluctant to increase spending because that might require additional taxes. They refuse to do that. The school districts then sue, and the Texas courts order the politicians to provide more money to schools, and then the politicians can go back and say, well, I didn't increase spending on schools that required raising your taxes. The courts did that. So it's a little bit of a ghost dance or circular firing squad or whatever you want to call it, but the increases over the course of the last 30 years or so since the courts started getting into the fairness and adequacy of funding in the 1970s and especially 1989 forward, the last several major increases in spending have been court ordered.
Our phone lines are open. If you want to call in, listeners, let us know what you think. Do you think the school system, the school finance system in Texas is unconstitutional? If it's unfair, give us a call. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. So, Joe Smith at Texas ISD, one other issue about the school finance case is that the court had declared that the current system created a state ad valorem tax, basically a statewide property tax. That's in violation of the Constitution because so many school districts are setting their tax near the tax cap. So is that being addressed?
Yes, it is. Lynn Moak with Moak Casey Associates just gave testimony, and in that testimony he gave a chart of the district's tax rates and made that exact statement that there is a over 600 districts at the $4 mark on their M&O tax rate, and that's the mark where you have to have an election to go above it. So that argument can be made there, as well as there's another 250, 300 school districts up to the cap of $1.17.
Right, so that becomes a de facto statewide property tax then. But how do you work around that? I mean, what kind of solution could they come up with to deal with that?
Well, I'm not sure about solutions. In the past, they had that enrichment tier that was not required to fund a meaningful, equitable program, a program that met the state requirements for educating students, and anything above that was icing on the cake. Well, in the last 20 years, there's been no icing on the cake. And the funding that they call enrichment is funding that is needed to fund a basic program. So they're going to have to arrive at a cost of a basic program and fund that, and then give districts the ability, if they wish, to levy some tax or to appropriate some funding for above that.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We've got some callers in. The number is 614-8980. Ramon has called in. Ramon, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Welcome to The Source.
Hey, thank you so much. I enjoy your program very much. I'm a big advocate on helping out at school. I got two high school kids. I live in Northeast Independent School District here in San Antonio. And we always volunteer because the kids, they need so much money in these schools. You know, I mean, yes, it's great for the community to get involved and help out. But, you know, some of the things that we have to help out with is because they don't have enough funding. You know, teachers are expected to do so much with so little, but yet they just the money's just not being given. If it's not being shortchanged them, or they're cutting back, and there's just no reason for it. You know, we would rather do without a few bridges in Texas, you know, than to cut back on these schools. You know, our football program happened to be pretty good this year, and we're playing all these schools across, you know, the state.
Right.
And along with some of the
Ramon, thank you so much. We got to go to this break. I appreciate you. You got some great points there. We're going to go to the break. We're going to come back, get some responses to that. We're talking about school finance in Texas. The number is 614-8980. We want to hear from you. Do you think it's unfair the way schools are being funded in the state? Varies from school district to school district. So this is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We just heard from our caller, Ramon, talking about some of the issues at his school district and how the parents are having to get involved and take up the slack with me to talk about some of the issues about the school finance case that was in Austin this morning in a courtroom. Joe Smith, he is the runs the website at TexasISD.com, former superintendent. Also, Professor Cal Gilson, Southern Methodist University Political Science Department. So, Joe Smith, is that common now across the state of Texas that parents are having to step up and even pay extra money for like extracurricular activities and all the extras that you would have in your schools?
Yes, yes. The money's got to come from somewhere, and the state has been stepping back from fully funding education for quite some time. At one time, it was up like 87% came from the state, and it's down around 40 now. And what Ramon said, he pointed out the two problems of this lawsuit that they will examine and examine and examine, and that is that they don't the schools do not have an adequate amount of money to fund the program that the same legislators that set the money level have set a accountability level as well, and the schools are saying that money level and accountability levels don't match. And then he was about to go off and talk about equity, and he was about to talk about the difference in one school to another. And that difference, in many cases, that will be brought out in this lawsuit, there's no difference there except the zip code. And so it makes a significant difference in the amount of funding opportunity that your children have based on where you live, and it makes a tremendous difference in the amount of taxes that you have to pay. The lower funded districts, those people have to pay higher taxes. That is the inequity part of it.
So, Professor Cal Gilson, we're talking about school districts, and it's one zip code versus a neighboring zip code, and maybe one is cash rich or property rich. Others, does that enter into the political sphere? Do you see people fighting the breakdown of the system because they don't want their dollars going to someone else's zip code to help their kids' education?
Oh, yeah, that's been a big part of the fight for the last 25 years. As Joe said, recent comparisons of Texas to other states vary a little bit, but 2012 had Texas per capita student funding 49th in the nation, 50 states in the District of Columbia, and we're 49th at 73% of the national average. And so that goes to the question of adequacy. Does Texas provide enough base funding to school districts to do an adequate public education? And at 73% of the national average, the school districts are saying no. And then going all the way back to the very famous Edgewood ISD case from 1989. That was a case in the San Antonio area where Edgewood is a property poor district, and the comparison was to Alamo Heights that had 15 times the housing value, property value, to fund its school district. And so for the last 25 years, the school districts have been challenging in the courts both the adequacy of funding and the equity across districts. And so when the judge came in this morning, I wasn't in the courtroom as Joe was, but it seems pretty clear when he said deja vu all over again that he means that the school districts have won 6 of the last 7 challenges on adequacy and equity over the last 25 years, and they're lining up to win another one, which is going to permit the elected politicians to deny responsibility for providing extra money while doing it anyway and blaming the courts.
Let's go back to the phones. Our number is 614-8980. Do you think school systems are being funded fairly across the board and across Texas? Charles has called in. Charles, thanks for calling in. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, I've looked at it as economic adequacy are a lower economic people. They're working. They don't have time to come in and volunteer in the schools. They don't have the money to pay into the schools to give them greater equality. You look at San Antonio, Edgewood versus the Northside schools. You have supplies for the Northside schools. There's adequate plumbing, whereas in the Southside schools, teachers are bringing their own supplies in. We're just talking copy paper. And if you don't have that, how can you run a classroom?
Okay, Charles, thank you for that call. We lost your call there. Let's get another caller on the air. Patrick has called in. Patrick, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. Well, I just wanted to say that I'm a former Edgewood school teacher, and my wife was a teacher. She's now retired from Northeast, and so we've seen basically would like to just address the situation in Bexar County with the it's so blatant in terms of having 13 to 14 independent school districts just within this one county. It's more or less an anomaly in terms of the other metro areas of Texas that we have so many school districts, and they run the range from the property poor Edgewood to, you know, the wealthier districts, Alamo Heights, Northeast, et cetera. And the disparity is so blatant. And so, you know, it's totally understandable that the courts would see the system being unconstitutional because it's so unfair and so lacking in equity. So I think I better
all right, Patrick.
Stop at that.
All right, thanks. Some great comments there. Appreciate that. So Joe Smith from TexasISD.com. We've seen, you know, look at school districts across Texas. Not only do they vary and according to how much income they get, but also according to how well-functioning they are. Of course, we hear in San Antonio we've got problems with South Sand, but you look at Brownsville, there's a federal investigation into corruption there. The TEA is looking at Big Spring ISD. So it's not just money. It's how well these schools function.
Well, that's correct, and you are correct. And if you isolate the schools and look at governments, you'll find similar situations. The responsibility for the equity or the tax structure to support the school lies with the state of Texas, and it lies in the Constitution of the state of Texas. And so, you know, we need to go back to the Constitution for the funding. Get the funding straightened out, and I think you'll see a lot of other things come together. Now, I do agree that governance is an issue and that it's something that local people have to look at. But the responsibility for building a tax system that will fund the schools in a manner that gives every kid an educational opportunity similar to the taxes that his parents pays is a state responsibility.
Let's get Samuel in on this conversation. Samuel, thanks for calling in. Appreciate that. You're on the air. Welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'd like to comment on why is Texas spending $82 million of taxpayers' money to teach creationism? We have charter schools like Responsive Education Solutions, which has 65 campuses and 17,000 students enrolled. And in their workbook on biology, they sideswipe and smear evolution. And for a long time, we've known that evolution is a theory and not the layman's use of the term theory, which is an idea that might be true, but a scientific theory, which is supported by experiments and observations.
Okay, I don't want to re-argue evolution versus creationism right now because that would eat up the rest of the day. But with point taken that charter schools are getting a lot of taxpayer money, but apparently some people say that they are not a big winner in what Judge Dietz is calling for. Isn't that right, Joe Smith?
That would be correct. The charter schools are there, and the charter schools in most cases do receive more money for on a per student basis than the public schools do. The legislature created them; they're legal, and we need to fund them in an equitable manner as well.
So the Texas Public Policy Foundation, they are a conservative group. They have said that we need a comprehensive reform to the way that schools are funded, and they think that there's just a lot of room for efficiency. Is this gaining traction, Professor Gilson?
Well, efficiency is certainly a value. It's very important. But when you start from the idea that Texas is providing 73% of the national average per student, you can be terribly efficient but not have enough money to do the job credibly, let alone well. And that's where I think Texas is right now. There's no question, I think, that the judge is going to decide that more money has to go into this system for its basic, you know, is it providing enough money for a decent education? And then the other dimension is equality across school districts. And we've been wrestling with this for a very long time. If you go back to the Perot Commission in the 80s, they dealt with equity issues. Robin Hood in the 1990s was heavily focused on equity, as was the 2006 rejiggering of the funding scheme. So we're going to have to go back to adequacy and to equity and deal with those in a clear-eyed, fair-minded way. And while efficiency will be important, it won't get us where we need to go.
Now, the backstory for school finance is how it's going to impact this upcoming election cycle, particularly with in a general election with Greg Abbott, who's the attorney general. He's basically arguing against this equitable school finance system. And Wendy Davis, who and her surrogates are saying that this is, you know, he's partly to blame for the system we have now. Is that going to stick, Mr. Gelson?
Well, I think that'll be one of the major issues in the campaign. Greg Abbott has been on an education tour around the state for the last several weeks and talking about the need for adequate funding, but not being very specific, and talking about the need to support charter schools and competition. And I think Wendy Davis has been hitting him on those issues. And when Wendy Davis talks about putting more money into education, she's criticized by the Abbott folks for talking about tax increases. I think her smartest political move would simply to be to express the hope that Judge Dietz put some more money into the system, that take the responsibility off her for saying how much, and just agree with the judge that more money needs to go in.
All right, so when do you think we can expect to see some sort of ruling from Judge Dietz, Joe Smith?
It's not, you can't get a very specific date around here. I heard a little discussion on the sidewalk this morning, and everybody's thinking that it'll be next year.
After Judge, the election.
No, Judge Dietz will rule, and then it'll go to the Supreme Court, and Judge Dietz
We're out of time. We're so out of time. Thank you so much. Joe Smith, TexasISD.com. Love your website. Professor Cal Gelson of Southern Methodist University. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be back after this break.